Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today I want to welcome Mark Clifton to the podcast. Mark serves as senior director of church planting and revitalization for the North American Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. Mark, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. It's always good to be here.
Yeah, I got to record with you a few months back on a different topic. It's good to have you back in the studio today. We're going to be talking about the pastor as mentor. But before I frame that up for us, I want to just spend a few moments here catching up and for our listeners to get to know you a bit. Now, you serve with the North American Mission Board. Your title is the Senior Director of Church Planting and Revitalization. And really, that's a position that I think it's safe to say was created for you because of your track record of loving churches back into health and what took place here in Kansas City, in particular at Warnell Road Baptist Church where you served, and a role you've been in now, what, 2.5 years with NAM?
Yeah, 2.5 years. Yep. That's right. Yeah, it's an opportunity for us to address the death rate of Southern Baptist churches. As shocking as it may seem, we may plant 17 churches every Sunday, but we close 13 churches every Sunday. And so we see about 900 churches a year close, and 90% of those, Dr. Allen, are in communities that are growing in population.
So now, that's an important statistic because I have heard this topic spoken of over the years almost always in a way that suggested that the closure of those churches was due primarily to demographic transitions within a community.
Perhaps demographic transitions, but not a reduced to demographic numbers.
Okay.
They're very much so. In fact, you know, the rural areas that are depopulating, churches can remain in those areas for decades because you can have a church of 8 or 12 people in the open country and no one think there's anything wrong with that. It still has social validation. You have a church of 8 or 12 people in Kansas City or Boston or New Orleans or Atlanta, it's not going to survive. And so we are seeing churches close in the urban areas and suburban areas. And again, close where population's growing. Definitely the population is shifting. The demographics have changed, but in many cases, they're not reducing, they're growing. And it's terribly unfortunate. We just have to address the issue that churches die where people are moving into. And so that's what we're trying to do through replanting, through really garnering all the resources that Southern Baptists have locally and nationally, and saying, let's put focused attention on these churches at the point of their closure so that we can help them live again. And we're seeing some success in that thanks to God's grace.
By God's grace. Isn't that the truth?
Yep.
Today we're talking about the pastor as mentor, and I want to give a little context for the topic today. You office here on our campus when you took this responsibility with NAM. We started providing an office for you, and so I see you on campus often. You have been in Kansas City. I guess you're a native Kansas Cityan, right?
Yeah, more or less. Born a couple hours north of here, but this is my home, sure.
Yeah, so you've been in and around Kansas City and the seminary here for many decades.
Right.
And then I served immediately before coming to campus and coming on board with NAM. You serve with, as I mentioned, Warnell Road Baptist Church. And so here's the point. I've seen you now for about 5 years, 4.5 years, ever since I came to Kansas City. And whenever I see you, typically I see a bunch of young men in tow. And when I think of mentorship from the office of the pastor, I think of you. And I know your reputation on the campus, your reputation in the church, and I know so many young men on this campus and beyond who have been touched specifically by your oversight, by your discipleship, by your mentorship. I also know that you believe that to be an integral part of church revitalization, church replanting.
Yes.
And so I want to dig into this some because I believe there's a story to tell there and a word of encouragement that ministers listening to this podcast need to hear about what intentional mentorship can do for the local church. So before we get into kind of the mechanics of this, just share your heart a bit. Tell us what brought you into the realization of the importance of pastoral mentorship.
All right, real quick. I was a student in college here in Kansas City, and I had a call from a great uncle who had opened up a church up in North Missouri that had closed many years ago, and he retired, and he lived near that church. It was an open country church, and they tore the boards off the windows and the doors, and they swept it out, and Uncle Billy Hereford started holding church there again. It started growing. He called me. I was 18 years old. I was a freshman. He called me and said, Mark, why don't you come up and preach up at Alta Vista? And I was a preacher boy, so I said, sure. I went up and preached at Alta Vista. Came home that evening. He called me that night at the college on the dorm, and he said, hey, Mark, I just want you to know that Alta Vista called you to be their pastor today. And I said, Uncle Bill, I didn't even know I was in view of a call. He said, well, I didn't want to tell you in case they voted no. Now, that's a true story. And I said, Uncle Bill, I don't know. I'm 18 years old. You know, I'm just a freshman in college. He said, Mark, he said, I tell you what, I'm going to stay here. but I need you to preach. He said, I'm just getting tired. And he wasn't getting tired. He said, I'm just getting tired and I can't preach every week, but I'll be up here living in the community. And I said, you know, let me think about it and pray over it. And I did, and I went. And Dr. Allen, that 80-year-old man poured his life into that 18-year-old kid. And he shepherded me and guided me and molded me. And the older I got, the more I realized how much of who I am as a pastor I learned hands-on from my great uncle Bill. And, you know, the reality is this. When my dad got out of the Second World War, he came and lived with my great uncle Bill. My great uncle Bill led him to Christ. My great uncle Bill got him into college. My great uncle Bill got him his first church. And I realized this was a pattern in his life. And I just benefited from that so much that I've always desired to leave in my wake of my life a trail of young men whose ministry goes long beyond my time here on this earth. I find it very fulfilling. And then when I moved into the role of replanting dying churches, it's one of the three core pillars of what it takes to replant, which is to lead to Christ and disciple young men. I've never been in a dying church in my life, Dr. Allen, that said, the problem is we got too many young men between the ages of 18 and 35. It's always we just don't have enough of those. Hmm. And really, that really becomes in some ways the secret sauce. You do all the other things to replant, but when you can engage and disciple young men between the ages of 18 and 35 and give them real leadership in the church, it changes. And one of the great things about living in this culture we live in today is that young men really do want to learn from older guys. And if I just make myself available to them and are willing to invest in their lives, I have no problem finding young guys who want to come and learn from me and observe what I've done. And Dr. Allen, I learn from them. I mean, God uses them to keep me sharp. Otherwise, I'm just going to kind of get stuck in my own ways. And they really help keep me sharp and keep me focused. And he uses them in my life really more. You know, discipleship's always a two-way street. There's only one person that didn't disciple both ways, and that was Jesus. Everybody else, discipleship's a two-way street. So the more I disciple them, the more I'm discipled to be like Jesus. It's a total win-win. But it does take time. And I think that's what a lot of pastors just aren't willing to figure out. How can I carve out this time? I don't think they realize the incredible value, not only to the young men, but to their own ministry, that making time for them is so critically important.
Well, you said a lot there and a lot worth kind of reflecting on, unpacking here. The first observation, and just as you're talking here, was you believe in mentorship because you benefited from it.
Right.
And that planted a seed in your heart. It framed your understanding of ministry. And now you have seen the dividends it's paid over the years.
Let me give you a little more, a specific example. I'm 18 years old. You know, I'm a freshman in college. I'm up at this country church. I love to watch the Kansas City Chiefs. So on Sundays, you know, when church is over, I sort of saddle up next to somebody I know that has an air-conditioned house. This was 1980, not all of them did, and has a big recliner and a big TV, you know, as big as they were in 1980s, because I wanted to go home and watch football. And sure enough, they'd have pity on me, and one of those families would take me home. About the second quarter, the doorbell would ring. And I knew who it was. And he wouldn't come in the house. They'd say, Mark, preacher wants to see you. He's on the porch. And I'd go out on the porch. It'd be this little 80-year-old preacher, Uncle Bill. He'd have a short sleeve shirt on and a tie. And I can see his little Ford Fairmount yet in the driveway. And this is what he'd say to me. He'd say, preacher, I'm going to go visit some lost people. Do you want to come with me or do you want to stay here and watch football?
How do you answer that? Yeah.
And so I would say, well, I really want to stay here and watch football, but I wouldn't say that because, you know, I'd say, oh, I'll come with you, Uncle Bill. And he would take me out, and he knew every person who lived on those roads. He knew their stories, and he could go up and talk to Jesus about them, about Jesus to them. And I saw him lead many people to Christ. And Dr. Allen, there is a tremendous number of pastors today who never had an Uncle Bill in their life. And so when I talk to them about what it means to be mentored, since they were never mentored, they don't really know how to do that. And I think the greatest blessing that man gave me was he modeled for me how to do that for other men.
Yeah, and there is a pent-up demand. There is a need there amongst young men, and not just a need like older guys like myself where you look at them and say, you have a need, but that's a need very often they feel. Mm-hmm. They're longing for that. And I tell people oftentimes when I'm asked about our campus and students, I say one of the distinctives of ministry in the 21st century and of leading a seminary in the year 2017 is you cannot assume that your students come from healthy families and healthy churches.
That's true.
Many of the students here are coming from broken homes and unhealthy churches. Many of our students were converted in college.
Right.
So they didn't spend 15 years being discipled, and so they're here, and they're wanting someone to pour into them, someone to invest in them. Now, as you're talking about this process, this aspect, this dynamic of mentorship, Yeah, you know, I'm struck by, as you're outlining it and how you received mentorship, I'm struck by the fact that it sounds pretty organic. Yes, mm-hmm. there was intentionality on behalf of the elder gentleman, mm-hmm. your uncle who was helping you, but it wasn't so much that you met, you know, every Tuesday morning at 7 a.m.
Right.
for your weekly discipleship meeting.
Right. And that's true in this situation with the young man that I seek to mentor too. You know, everybody's schedule is so hectic, and it's not, you know, every Tuesday morning, 9 o'clock. It is being in their lives and being available to them. There's some young men that they know they can contact me, and they still do, and they'll text me, and they'll say, hey, I just need to come over and spend some time on your deck tonight. That happens on a relatively regular basis. And I may already be like in my sweatpants and in my recliner and two steps away out of the bed, you know, and one of these guys will text me. And I need to be available when they're available. And so I'll always text them back because I've made a commitment to the Lord that I will be available when they need me. And I'll say, man, I can't wait for you to get here. And so I'll go up and sit on the deck and wait for them, and pretty soon they'll come in, come up the steps of the deck. And we may sit there, Dr. Allen, till 1 in the morning talking about anything they want to talk about life and about their family and about the gospel, about hard things, about fun things, and just pouring our line, just being available and sharing time with them. But being available when they are available is really what matters and what's important. And I sleep so much better after that happens. And I wouldn't trade those evenings.
Because you're up so late.
I'm up so late. But I wouldn't trade those for anything. As I look back on my ministry, you know, the churches I've been able to plant and pastor, those are great. But I look back at the men. And, you know, again, my father did that. I was thinking last night, how many men my dad mentored and are in ministry because of his time he spent with them. And again, I'm so fortunate because I saw that happen in his life. It happened in my great uncle's life as he did that for me. And unfortunately, there are so many pastors that nobody mentored them, and they just don't understand the benefit of that.
And after all, this is a biblical concept, is it not? 2 Timothy 2:2, teach these things to faithful men who will be able to teach others also.
Right, right. And you even think about Paul. You know, I'm preaching through Timothy now, 1 Timothy in the church I'm serving in. And I mean, Paul was a busy man. I mean, he was planting churches. He was either in jail or being arrested or getting out of jail or being stoned. I mean, and he had all the burdens of all the churches, and he was raising up elders. And yet, Dr. Allen, he took time to stop and find Timothy and say, all right, I'm going to invest myself in you. And, you know, you would think, well, he's so busy. Why does he have the time to invest in this young man? Why doesn't he let somebody else do that? But he doesn't. He's intentional about it. And again, it has to be a priority in our time. We have to create margins in our life so that we can do that. And if we do, we will benefit, the kingdom will benefit, and that young man will benefit.
Well, in the dynamic we're talking about here of investing yourself in younger men in ministry, and you've said this multiple times now, you say, you know, I'm seeking to serve them, to strengthen them, to equip them, to mentor them. But I wind up being the beneficiary.
Absolutely.
And it reminds me of that phenomenon we've all experienced on mission trips. You go overseas to preach the gospel, to serve someplace out of context, and you go there thinking you're going to bless some people, or you go there thinking you're going to equip some people, and you come back the one who's actually been blessed.
That's right. Plus, as a pastor, if you're mentoring young men half your age, you're learning what men and women half your age, you're learning how they communicate, you're learning what their needs are. It makes you a better preacher. It makes you a better pastor. You know, if we don't intentionally do that, we end up sort of just hanging out with people like us in our age group. And we really can, in this day and age, we can lose touch really quickly with the culture. And as pastors, we're called to the culture. We're not called to abandon it and withdraw from it. We're called to penetrate it with the gospel. And so these young men that I hang out with really help me interpret the culture in a very real way, in a very, very meaningful way, in a very contemporary way.
Mark, let's pause just for a moment for a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern College is preparing and equipping the leaders of today and tomorrow. Our students continue to be agents of change both in the United States and around the world. The unique community environment at Midwestern College fosters spiritual, personal, and academic growth as students deepen their understanding of the Word of God and the world He created. With our dual degree option, students can get grounded in the truth while getting ready for the marketplace. Our Accelerate program allows students to pursue both their Bachelor of Arts and their Master of Divinity simultaneously in one intensive 5-year program. Midwestern College, both residential and online degrees available. Midwestern is the sensible option for preparing and equipping the leaders of today and tomorrow. Find out more at MidwesternCollege.com.
All right, we're back. Now, I'm curious, when you are in a mentor relationship, let's say you're pastoring a church, as you have done for many years, how selective are you in determining which men you will really invest your time and energy in?
Well, I used to only select the best. You know, seriously, I'd sit out and go, well, that guy, now that guy, boy, he's got potential. And that one, man, that guy, you know, he could. But I had the privilege of the last couple of years of traveling a lot with Johnny Hunt. And Johnny taught me a lot of things. And he said, you know, why don't you pick out the knucklehead? Why don't you pick out the guy that is kind of a problem, and pick out the guy that is sort of an issue in the church, and the guy that maybe doesn't have the best personality? Because he said, if you look at Jesus' disciples, they weren't all the best guys, you know. And so I've begun to do that, and I've begun to, now some of these guys that I mentor are going to think they're the knucklehead, but not just picking out the best, I mean, in terms of what humanity would see as the best. And I think that's what Paul did with Timothy, because clearly there were some in the church at Ephesus who didn't think Timothy had what it takes to be a pastor, but Paul invested in him anyway. And so to answer your question, I really do seek the Lord's guidance in that. And rather than just to use my own wisdom and understanding, I really try to be sensitive to a young man that I sense who's open to this and willing to receive it and could really benefit from my help. And since I have really moved from just trying to focus on the high-capacity guys to really spending some time with other guys, that has been beneficial to me as well.
So let's say there are men listening to this podcast. They're pastoring a church. They're serving in some ministry context, and they're resonating with what we're saying. They want to be a mentor. They want to be a more faithful mentor. How would you encourage them? What words of instruction or counsel would you give them?
Well, you have to really be close to Jesus. I mean, you never know when you're going to get that text at midnight, and this young man's going to come over and sit on your deck, and he's going to unpack something that is going to just devastate you. And if you've sort of taken a few days off from your spiritual life and you're not really prayed up, as we say, and really in tune with the Holy Spirit, you're going to feel that. I really think it you have to make a commitment that you're going to be available and ready at all times. And that doesn't mean with your calendar. It means with your spirit, with your heart. You're going to have to every day really be in tune with the Holy Spirit and really walk close to Jesus, because at any time one of those young men may call you or text you or need you, and you've got to be ready to respond at that point. So I think it begins with a spiritual condition that you make this a top priority, to always be in spiritual shape for that. Secondly, again, to make yourself available every moment that you can. You know, I'm fortunate now. I'm not fortunate that my children are gone. That doesn't sound right. But my wife and I are in an empty nest stage of our life, so we have more flexibility. It's harder if you've got children at home, but I don't have any children at home. And my wife has a job, and she enjoys it, and she understands this is my ministry. And so, you know, if I need to be away and for an evening or whatever, it's not that critical as it would be as I was raising children. So you have to make the time in your own schedule to make yourself available to do that. And as I said, be spiritually ready to do that. And then really, really, really pray and ask the Lord to give you the spiritual gift of listening and sometimes just shutting up. They don't need to be told always what to do. They need to let you listen to them as they tell you what God's doing in their life. And to be a really active listener is an incredible part of mentorship.
You know, I was having a conversation just this past week with a really successful businessman in the Kansas City community. Mm-hmm. Our sons play Little League Baseball together, and we were visiting at the game. We were talking about his stage of life and his stage in his professional career. And I was just kind of asking him a few questions about how he orders his week and what at this stage of his life and his business's development, kind of how he chooses to allocate his time. And he said, you know, I really enjoy mentoring employees. Hmm. I said, really? And I kind of said, tell me about that. He said, well, I don't do it in a formal sense. He said, I don't have, like, you know, we're going to be every Tuesday for mentoring time. And he said, I don't want to sound condescending. And I'm also aware of the fact that, look, I'm the owner of the company, and obviously if you're the owner of the company, a younger employee, it would behoove them to be eager to be mentored, right? So he's aware of all those different potential dynamics. And he said, what I like to do is just try to give a well-spoken word of encouragement or a well-placed word of counsel. Mm. And by intentionally dropping that sentence or that phrase or that brief conversation, you can really steer a person to greater good. Right. And, of course, my mind raced from that to the local church and a ministry. And there's some people listening to this podcast maybe thinking, man, I pastor a big church. And, you know, if I tell all these young men I'll be available anytime, I don't, you know, I have to quit my day job. But maybe it's not so much, you know, meetings on end, Maybe it's more conversations or even strategically placed phrases or sentences or paragraphs.
It absolutely is. And you have no idea, we have no idea, Dr. Allen, what a positive, affirming comment from someone who's a pastor or a leader can mean in the life of a young man. You know, I think even of Paul when he talks to Timothy and he says, you remember the faith that was in you and in your mother and your grandmother. I mean, that's just an encouragement of, you know, don't give up and remember that. That's really important. But I want to say something else. Some of the pastors listening to this podcast are pastors of large churches, but 90% of the churches in the Southern Baptist Convention are normative-sized churches. They're churches of under 200. 63% are churches of under 100. And if you're one of those pastors who's pastoring a church of under 100, and you really want to see a change in the life of your church and a change in your life, find a young man, lead him to Christ, and disciple him this year. And you need to make the time to do that. And you don't have to get permission of the deacons or the WMU. You don't have to change the music. You don't have to take out the pews. You don't have to change the name of the church. But you can drastically change your ministry and probably the trajectory of that church. If you'll just make, and that means, a guy asks me all the time, well, where do I find these guys? I'm thinking, well, volunteer to coach Little League because they all have kids in Little League. Hang out at the same coffee shops. Do your sermon preparation at those coffee shops. And then engage the baristas and talk to people. And then every morning you get up, just pray and say, Lord, lead somebody across my path and engage them in gospel conversations. And I promise you, if you'll do that, the Lord will bring a young man across your path. And if you're ready and lead him to Jesus and then you disciple him, it will transform you more than a dozen church growth conferences you might go to. And I just really want to encourage men to do that, especially those men in normative-sized churches. And guys say, well, I'm bivocational. Even better, because you've got all kinds of opportunities in your workplace to figure out how to make that happen and how to do that. So it has benefits all around. And I think probably the guys that struggle most with this would be the men of the really large churches. And how do I really decide who I'm going to mentor? That is a struggle. I know Johnny Hunt, you know, he picks a couple of guys and they go with him every year, and then he picks, I think, 8 or 9, and he meets with them every, you know, he does that. He picks some, and I think every pastor should. But one of the joys of serving in normative-sized churches, you don't have to worry about that. You don't have too many guys. You may not have any, so you just got to go out and find one. And believe me, if you will be persistent in your prayer life, the Lord will bring somebody across your path.
That's very well said. Thank you. Listen, the time has flown here, Mark. What an exhilarating conversation this is. And my mind is racing back to years in the pastorate. My first pastorate, for about a year and a half, I took 6 men through a Saturday morning Bible study, and it was discipleship. It was mentorship. And when that group was done, I took another few guys through it. And it did. I resonate with what you're saying. It revolutionized the church. It energized me. I could see the fruit of my labor in these men's lives. And some of them were literally men I had won to the Lord. Mm-hmm. Others were men that were relatively new believers. And mm-hmm. to see them impacted. And before you know it, you start impacting 6, 12, 15, 20 men. And that can revolutionize the church.
It will. It will.
Well, listen, thank you for the conversation today. The pastor's mentor, you embody this in a way that inspires us all. Thank you for the conversation. Lord bless you.
Thank you, Dr. Allen.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.